Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone. Let's welcome in Greg Bishop. I mean, there's nothing like having two bishops on the show, Blaine Bishop and now his cousin Greg. Greg, welcome to the family reunion show, man. Good to have you.
Well, thank you for having me, and Blaine probably is a bit insulted by that, but I'll take the comparison.
No, actually, you know, you help our family name step it up a little bit with your knowledge and your educational background. So, yeah, man, I appreciate you having you on, cuz.
No worries at all. This will be a interview I remember forever, you know? So thanks, guys.
Greg Bishop from Sports Illustrated, our guest. So I wanted to start with this because anytime writers get something wrong, everybody tells them, you actually got the Super Bowl matchup correct, right? You picked before the season, you got the Super Bowl matchup right.
That is correct, and I'm glad that somebody noticed. You know, I didn't hear anything from my bosses about my September choice of the Chiefs and the Bucks to make it to the Super Bowl. I even had the Bucks coming on late. I think I had them as the seventh seed, but I said they would have to go on the road. They would have to do some avenging. They would have to beat some great quarterbacks. And, you know, I think it's that old theory, right, that a broken clock is right twice a day. And so, you know, take all wins when you can get them.
Who do you have actually winning between those two? Let's see if you can get it all the way right.
Yeah, I would still take the Chiefs, and I realize that I'm not exactly out on a limb there. I was in Kansas City this past weekend. I saw just sort of the demolition they put on of the Bills, who I think are a very good and emerging team with a lot of depth and a lot of good players on both sides of the ball. To see Mahomes and sort of the injury questions surrounding, you know, his concussion protocol, and to see him come out and play like that, and they just have so many weapons, I just think it would be a mistake to bet against him at any point in the next, I don't know, 10 years, you know, if they have a roster like this.
I'm with Greg Bishop, senior reporter for Sports Illustrated on Blaine and Mickey.
Yeah, Greg, I got half of that right. I had the Tampa Bay versus the Titans. Where did you have the Titans in this process of the playoffs and the Super Bowl? Did you even have them make the playoffs?
I believe I had them in the playoffs, but if I'm wrong there, I apologize to whoever's going to look it up and make fun of me on Twitter. I like a lot of what they're doing, you know. You got a good quarterback. You have an amazing running back. I think Mike Vrabel is a very good coach. I think they're headed absolutely in the right direction. And to me, I think what we saw this year is the AFC is, you know, pretty stacked, that there are a lot of good teams, that, you know, there were several challengers just a level below the Chiefs, and I think they should be in the mix for a while here, too.
Yeah, oh, no doubt about it. The Chiefs probably we're witnessing a dynasty in front of us. Is that going too far there, Greg Bishop from SI.com?
No, I don't think so at all. In fact, I wrote a piece on Tyrann Mathieu in September in which he told me that at last year's AFC Championship game, when they won to go to their first Super Bowl in 50 years, that he was on stage with Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. And the thing that they talked about before they won their first Super Bowl was how they wanted to create a dynasty, how it was there. And then you saw Patrick Mahomes, you know, he signs this huge contract, but he builds in for the near term a lot of flexibility. Then they go out, they re-sign Travis Kelce, they locked down Chris Jones, amazing defensive tackle. I mean, this is a team whose window has just opened, and I think you're going to be looking at them as a contender for this trophy in the same way we looked at the Patriots forever. You know, this is going to be year in, year out. If Patrick Mahomes is healthy, I think they've got a chance for the foreseeable future.
Man, I'm not surprised Tom Brady, as I picked him as halfway right for the Super Bowl. But how crazy is it? Tom Brady's 43, and he's making it to a Super Bowl, looking younger than he did probably 10 years ago and playing that way. Or is this a statement that it was more Tom Brady than Belichick, or is it the other way around? Or is it anything at all to his time with the Patriots?
It's a really interesting question. Yeah, I should start by saying I'm 41. I woke up today with a sore neck, an injury. You know, so I can't imagine like running away from these defenders the way he was last weekend. I actually was just talking to Tom House, his throwing coach, this morning. He said that he doesn't see barely any drop off in terms of what Brady can do, in terms of the throws that he can make. you know, we have a story coming out next week that's sort of relevant here on the 10 years that Brady didn't win a Super Bowl, the sort of gap in New England. And a couple folks that I've talked to for that story believe that it was more Brady than Belichick. I think that there's a little bit of recency bias involved there, and that, like Tom's back in the Super Bowl, the Patriots obviously had a rough season. But that's a little bit misleading because, you know, they've sold out for so many years to try to get there, and now they're going to have to reconfigure and rebuild. I would say that, like, neither person did not benefit from the other. You know, I think Tom absolutely benefited from Bill Belichick. I think Bill Belichick absolutely benefited from Tom Brady. But I think, to your point, I think what Tom's doing, what he's done, is special and unique. I mean, you're talking 10 Super Bowl appearances. I've only been to that many as a sports writer, roughly, and I didn't have to play to get into any of them. And I just think that we're going to look back at this as something not only without precedent, but just totally insane. When he's all said and done and the numbers are what they are and the rings are what they are, and even though I don't think they're going to win in Tampa in a couple weeks, imagine if he did, going through Brees, Rodgers, and Mahomes. I mean, that's just such an epic run, such an epic career. I honestly could see him hanging it up if that's what happened.
Well, with Greg Bishop with SI.com, senior writer for SI.com. Yes.
I know you got a little bit into the Titans, and yes, you did pick them to make the playoffs. I read all your picks earlier. You had the Titans in the playoffs. Nice. But what do you need to see from the Titans this offseason to believe that maybe they could go further in 2021 than they did this year and maybe have a shot to even try to dethrone those dreaded Kansas City Chiefs?
You know, to me, with them, it's just a matter of building depth. I like a lot of their young sort of skill position players. I think they could get better on both lines in terms of what they might be targeting in the draft. I think they play with a very sort of tough mindset, and I think bolstering that is good. You know, they run the ball. They now have wideouts, you know, that I think are, you know, really complementary to that process, and they have a quarterback who can sling it all over the field. And so that, to me, is the kind of team that I think is poised to take a step the way that Buffalo did this year, to really emerge as a true challenger, you know, for the conference. And, you know, their issue moving forward is going to be that there will still be the Chiefs and there will still be Patrick Mahomes, and Buffalo's still coming up and Baltimore still looks good. All of which is to say, I'm excited about the next couple of years. I think we're seeing the dawn of a new era in the NFL, especially at the quarterback position. I think it's really interesting because we've been through this long time with the Mannings and Brady and Rodgers and Roethlisberger, to see that moving in a new direction. And I think the Titans are in some ways emblematic of that trend, in that they are a younger team with a lot going in the right direction. And I think they're poised to be the kind of team that we're talking about this time of year, you know, for the foreseeable future as well.
You mentioned Rodgers is just part of that long time NFL royalty at quarterback and always with a team near the top. Man, things ended so ugly for their season on Sunday. And, you know, everybody's ending is ultimately ugly when you end in the playoffs. But it didn't really have anything good to say. You know, he talked about the field goal not being his call. So instantly, a lot of people are saying, well, he's just going to force his way out and get traded. It's a $31.5 million cap charge if they try to move on from him. I mean, do you think cooler heads are going to prevail there?
100%. And, you know, I've done a lot of cover stories at SI, and Aaron was one of them. And one thing that stood out to me about him is just his memory is long. You know, he's a guy that never forgets anything. He's happy to, like, talk trash to somebody who did something to him 15 years ago on a football field that person wouldn't even remember. And I think some of what you saw after that game was he was not happy about the draft. You know, that was clear from the moment it happened. You know, could they have used another player with the pick they spent on Jordan Love? Would that have gotten past the Bucs? I think that's a fair sort of sentiment to at least examine. You know, obviously they had an incredible season. They were the top seed in their conference. There's a lot to like there. I also think that Matt LaFleur is a great coach. Now, he made a couple big mistakes on Sunday, you know, and I think that's part of growing into that role. But if I'm him, you know, I would come out right now and say, Aaron's not going anywhere. We will do everything we can to get this right. And then just run it back with, you know, the emergence of A.J. Dillon, the defense that's improving, the play of Jair Alexander, and the Rodgers, Devontae Adams. Like, that's a connection we saw this season that's as good as any in the NFL. And it would be a shame to take a really special year and break it up over not going for it on fourth down.
Greg Bishop on with us, senior reporter from Sports Illustrated on Blaine and Mickey.
Well, Greg, I want to ask you this question about just quarterbacks in general and where the money is and how that is kind of seems like give them leverage to actually, you know, want to be moved. Let's say Watson, Rodgers to Stafford. I mean, man, back in my day, which is a long time ago, that would be unheard of. And you just kind of ride it out and hopefully, you know, they do a better job of drafting and signing a free agent. Why has it gotten to this point where, you know, they don't look bad and that they want out? Like, why doesn't Aaron Rodgers, they were 13-3 just for the thought of you want to be moved, even if you didn't say that. I mean, it's okay at this point in time.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I think there are a couple of things in play there. The first to me is just the sheer amount of money involved. You know, these guys have more leverage because they're so tied into these salary caps. And what we know is next year's salary cap is going to be lower because of the pandemic and the money flowing in. So it makes it really hard if a guy, you know, wants to, like, say, like Deshaun Watson wants to withhold his services to have 25% of your cap not playing. Like, that would pretty much doom your whole season. The other thing I think that's interesting here in a way that we've seen sports evolve is that I think part of this is like the NBA effect. You know, we really saw guys in that league take control of their own stories, of their own careers, of their own destinations. I mean, you saw it recently again with James Harden going to the Nets. And I think what you're seeing is NFL players saying, look, you know, we don't have to be part of this same system in the way that it's been set up forever. We absolutely can take control of our own careers. You know, I covered the Jets when Darrelle Revis was there, and he was one of the first guys that said, like, if you don't pay me what I'm worth, you know, I'm not going to play. And that kind of situation tends to reflect poorly on the player, but I understand where they're coming from. You know, Blaine, I think you know as well as anybody, if you have a bad year, they're going to come to you and want a discount. You know, they're going to want to change the contract in ways that benefit the team. They're going to want salary cap flexibility. I think anybody that's played in the NFL, you know, knows it's sort of tilted, but I think it's tilting more toward the players, and I don't have an issue with that. I think it's a long time coming. This is a, you know, $14 billion a year industry, and the guys that make it are guys like you that played in the NFL, and, you know, to me, like, you know, go get it. You know, you deserve it.
No doubt about it. They have more leverage than ever. And then you're probably going to get new contracts at worst case scenario with Aaron Rodgers' case, probably. We're on with Greg Bishop of SI.com, senior writer. I guess one more question for me, and that is talk a little bit about, I think you did a piece on Jack Easterby there with the Texans. It seems like there's always a lot of controversy around him. I guess give us a little history lesson on how he rose so fast and then why is it always so much noise around what he's doing?
Yeah, that's a good one. We've done two Easterby stories in the last couple months. We had a follow-up out about a week ago if people are interested in checking it out. And, you know, the sort of Cliff Notes version is Jack was the team chaplain in Kansas City. He went to New England and became a character coach, really focused on performance. And then he went to Houston and basically took over football operations. So that's, you know, Brian Gain gets pushed out of general manager in 19. Bill O'Brien is fired in 2020 as the head coach. And eventually, you know, what our reporting bore out is that Jack became the only voice really in Cal McNair's ear. Now, there's not necessarily anything wrong with that until, you know, half of the organization feels fearful about their jobs. Deshaun Watson is unhappy with the direction of the team. We reported and stand by our reporting that he absolutely wants out of there. And so you're taking a guy who's a generational talent, you know, probably a top five player in the entire NFL. And you're making him unhappy based on the advice of someone who's not really done more than, like, win in New England, which, like, everybody won in New England from that time period. And so I think what you're seeing now is there was an expectation Jack might get pushed out, that they were going to go in a different direction as a coach. And one thing we reported in our last story is that Jack met with Cal McNair after the season's final game. They were the last two people to leave the stadium. Our understanding is that they prayed together over the direction of the franchise, and the next morning they were on a plane to New England to get Nick Caserio, who's Jack's longtime ally and close friend. So it looks like he survived, and I think, you know, if my mentions are any indication, what Texans fans are most upset about is that it looks like Cal chose Jack over Deshaun, which obviously would be an insane choice, you know, no matter who it would be.
We're on with Greg Bishop, senior writer for SI.com.
I wanted to ask you about this, Greg. I have gotten Sports Illustrated for basically my entire life. So the monthly thing is still taking me some getting used to. But the cover story from this past month, the one that I've been reading over, was your story. And it's basically about how hard it is for teams to get back who lose the Super Bowl. And, you know, for Titans fans and for Blaine and for all of us, that's something that we all remember thinking, well, this is a great team. They got everything in place. We're going to go to the Super Bowl around here all the time. We didn't see it. You guys actually wrote about that. It's your story, cover story, in this month's edition of the magazine.
Yeah, you guys are pointing out the best stuff. I should swap you in for my agents, you know. I got to tell them to do a little bit better job here. So, they wanted me to explore the idea of a Super Bowl hangover or curse. And ultimately, the conclusion we came to is that there's not one. But I think that there's pressure in playing in that game, and particularly in losing it, in terms of the next season. You know, some things I explore, like teams that try to go all in when they probably, you know, should have just let things be. Then there's the flip side of that, you know, teams that wanted to take another run and didn't make enough changes. Then there are, like, freakier things, like this year with the 49ers, who were moved out of their home stadium, who had $80 million worth of roster money land on IR, who dealt with COVID, who had, like, I think three, like, they lost Bosa, Garoppolo, and another Solomon Thomas in the same game to the same injury in New York. And so, you know, the idea, I think, like, is something Dan Quinn told me, which is just essentially that weird stuff tends to happen in the NFL, that it's hard to win in this league, and that basically we look at teams that lost the Super Bowl, like his Falcons, that, you know, obviously dropped that 28-3 lead, and we think that there's a curse or a hangover, when really it's more just that it's hard. It's hard to get back. Yeah. It's hard to win. It's hard to keep things together. It's hard to find the same chemistry again. And, you know, because these teams are in the Super Bowl, we put a greater spotlight on them.
All right, one last one on the way out, and this is just a strictly curious to get your thoughts. Phillip Rivers retiring. We looked at his stats. He's like the fifth in all-time yards and fifth in touchdowns. And yet, if you look at social media, there are some, even amongst the national media, who say compiling stats doesn't make you a Hall of Famer, you know, that there's more to it. Curious to get your thoughts on the way out about Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't vote for the Hall of Fame, but he would have my vote if I did. You know, I always kind of think it's silly when people say, like, Eli Manning was a better quarterback than Dan Marino. You know, and I don't mean that disrespectfully. Dan Marino was, like, one of the best players of his generation. And, yeah. You know, Blaine, you know this. I mean, like, it's hard to win the Super Bowl. You definitely don't do it by yourself. And so these things hinge on, like, a million things. Like, for Eli Manning, for instance, a guy caught a football well covered using his helmet. Like, I mean, and that makes him better than Dan Marino? I'll never, ever understand that kind of argument. I think winning is important. I think it should matter. Phillip Rivers won a lot of games. And, you know, the fact that he didn't win a Super Bowl, to me, isn't as relevant as he's a main part of this era when the NFL truly became, like, an aerial, you know, showcase, when passing became this huge thing, and he did it consistently for a long time on a lot of good teams, and that to me is more than enough to get him in.
Greg, good stuff, man. We need to make this happen again. You and Blaine, when you're at the family reunion, you know, sampling the different varieties, potato salad and everything, going through the buffet line, you guys need to set up another interview, and we'll have you back on the show again.
No doubt.
I can't wait, guys. Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.